This morning, I'd like to investigate a short section of our Lin Ji Lu excerpt, translated by Thich Nhat Hanh, and also investigate a story from the Lin Ji Lu that, for me, bears some relationship to it. So first, here are the lines that struck me as important. Lin Ji says, "My friends, as far as the insight of this mountain monk goes, there is no difference between you and Shakyamuni Buddha. Today, in every ordinary daily activity you do, do you feel you lack anything? Is there any moment when the six miraculous beams of light do not shine out? Anyone who has that insight will be a person who has nothing to do throughout his life. Today, in every ordinary daily activity you do, do you feel you lack anything?" So, of course, this is a very important pointer here from our great ancestor Lin Ji. Do you feel like you lack anything? Well, if you say no, I'd like to hear about it, because this is so human to feel lack. And one of the reasons that human beings get caught in this idea that we lack something, either we don't have enough or we aren't enough, is because we contrast that with thinking that there is this state that we can reach where we do have enough, or where we are enough. So we contrast not having enough with having enough. And we make this dualistic contrast all the time. This tendency of the mind to compare is shown up in this story that I want to tell you about. Before I read you the story, which of course is going to be one of those stories where you might hear some things and go, "What? Oh, I don't understand anything about Zen." Keep filtering it through your own sense of thinking you don't have enough and thinking you have enough. In this sense, when we listen to koans or stories about the great masters of the past or dialogues between them, there's a tendency to get lost in not knowing. And I'm not talking about the not knowing which has been favored for so many decades and centuries by Zen teachers, the not knowing that's the most intimate, but a kind of delusive not knowing, sinking into some idea, a comparison between not knowing and knowing. There's a kind of knowing and not knowing that are in diametrical opposition to each other. We do this all the time. We make things into this opposition, lacking, having enough. But underneath that is something that really, there's no phrase to describe it. Maybe it's just this. Maybe it's everything is this. Zen teachers are constantly finding ways to talk about it. Here's how Lin Ji talks about it. This is after his awakening experience, but when he's still a student of his teacher, Wang Bo. One day, when Wang Bo entered the kitchen, he asked the head rice cook, "What are you doing?" And this is always a wonderful opening for any Dharma dialogue. What are you doing? Well, you know, if we were to go into the kitchen and ask one of the cooks, "What are you doing?" and they were cooking rice, one answer could be, "I'm cooking rice." And that would be the truth. But of course, Lin Ji is hot from his enlightenment experience, and he's going around testing everybody. What are you doing? He's hoping for some answer. But this cook says, "I'm picking over the rice for the monks. I'm looking through the rice for impurities and I'm picking them out." A very deep statement. Because, of course, he could be referring to that idea that many people have in practice, that practice is some kind of a path of purification, which is actually what we learn from our Theravada ancestors and cousins, that there is a way to pick through the rice of our hearts and minds and only have what's nourishing left. Of course, that's not our way in Zen. We say that even the things that are not nourishing are tasty. That is, our anger, our confusion, our not knowing, yum, 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 give me more. All right, I can sit with everything, boredom, stupidity, whatever. This is Wangbo, Linji's teacher, who's doing this. If I said Linji, I was mistaken. Wangbo, the teacher, says, how much do they eat in a day? So he's playing along with the rice cook. And the rice cook says 2.5 bushels of rice. So again, he's kind of going the straight and narrow, even though we could take some teachings from him. He's just cooking the rice. He's nothing fancy. But Wangbo is testing him. He's trying to show him something beyond what he understands. And so Wangbo says, isn't that too much? And the cook says, I'm afraid that it's not enough. And here we have it. This is the core of this particular dialogue. Too much, not enough. Lacking, not lacking. Stupid, smart. Good, bad. This is where we all get caught. So what does Wangbo do in the tradition of this particular lineage? He hits him. Not our lineage tradition, but certainly this is what's come down through the Linji line, through Wangbo. So, of course, you know how things are in a monastery. People talk to each other. The cook goes to Linji, our hero, hero of the Linji Lu, the student of Wangbo, and he tells him what happened. So Linji said to him, I'll take care of this for you. I will go to our teacher and I will test him. Doesn't say, why don't you go and ask the teacher what he means? Because he's also playing a high stakes game, just like his teacher. So Linji comes in to attend Wangbo. He's Wangbo's jisha. And Wangbo tells him the story. The cook didn't understand, said Linji. Please, my teacher, can you give me a turning word? And I'll pretend to be the cook. And this is, of course, something that we do, you might call it supervision. Like, what should I have said to the cook? Tell me, I'll be the cook, and you be the teacher again. Give me a turning word. A turning word is something that people, that Zen teachers say that makes people go, oh, thank you, I get it now. It's used in many different places in the stories and teachings. Sometimes the turning word is actually a word. Sometimes in this lineage it's a hit or a shout. Sometimes in another lineage tradition it's seeing peach blossoms. Turning words can arise from everywhere. So Linji pretends to be the cook and he says, isn't that too much? Wangbo says to him, and here's his attempt to make a turning word, well, why not say, we'll eat a bowl of rice again tomorrow? And Linji says, why talk about tomorrow? Let's eat the bowl of rice right now. And he hits his teacher. Wangbo comments on what just happened. In this translation, this lunatic has come here again to pull the tiger's whiskers. In another translation by Jeffrey Broughton, he says, this wacko comes in. I love that translation. You wacko, you crazy person, you lunatic. You've come here to pull the tiger's whiskers. And there's a comment on this from a Japanese Rinzai teacher who says, the tiger plays with his cub. There they are, playing together. The father and the son, the teacher and the student. So Linji plays along and shouts, and then he leaves. Later, Guishan, the Dharma brother of Wangbo, asks his student Yangshan. There's a lot of instances of them commenting on things that happened between Wangbo and Linji. So again, this cements my understanding that koan stories are gossip. So Guishan asks, what did these two worthies have in mind? What were they talking about to his student? And Yangshan says, well, what do you think? And Guishan says, only when you have a child of your own do you understand how your father loved you. It's a beautiful statement. It's a statement that was quite common in Chinese folklore. And any of us who have children know the truth of this. We didn't really appreciate our parents. And those of you who don't have children yet maybe can imagine your way into this. Imagining that you're suddenly in the position of your own father or mother and suddenly you see how kind they were to you, even in their imperfection. They cared for you. They changed your diapers. They fed you. Now that you're doing the same thing, you appreciate it. And this is how it is when we become leaders of the Sangha. So many of us in this room are leaders of the Sangha who take care of each other in a parental way, where not in a kind of condescending way, but in the way a parent might sit in the playground watching her children play on the swings, just making sure that everything is okay, keeping the details, making sure to bring the carrot sticks so that when the child is hungry, there's something to eat. Very simple, straightforward. The cook goes out and buys the supplies so that we can be nourished. The shuso tends to the cushions so there's room for everyone and makes sure that everything is running along smoothly. This is so we can dive down into our practice. This is what Guishan means. And maybe he's also talking about, one commentary says that he's talking about the teacher of both Guishan and Wangbo, Baijan, some recollection of their mutual teacher and gratitude for what Baijan taught both Wangbo and Guishan. But Yangshan, the student, disagrees. He says, no, that's not it. Well, then what do you think, says the teacher Guishan. And the student Yangshan says, it's more like if you bring a thief into the house, everything will be ruined. And that's the end of this particular koan story. So bringing a thief into the house to ruin everything. This is the job of a Zen teacher. Being parental, yes, that's one part of it. Embodying Guanyin, the bodhisattva of compassion, but we also embody the spirit of wisdom, the bodhisattva of wisdom, Manjushri, who has a sword that cuts through delusion. Sometimes this cutting through delusion is called being a thief, being a robber. And if you invite a robber into your home, well, then your house will be ruined. The house that we've carefully constructed that says, this is who I am, and this is the way the world is, will be disturbed, destroyed by this sword of wisdom. And it's a kind of back and forth. It's, I guess, crassly, you could say it's good cop, bad cop. Sometimes just yes, 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 and sometimes no, cut it out. Back and forth and back and forth. From a deeply loving perspective, because we see, and we see this for each other, how we get caught in this idea that there isn't enough. So the cook thinks that the rice isn't enough. That can only be true in contrast to thinking that there's too much. We think that we are lacking in the qualities of a Buddha. And Linji tells us that we are already a Buddha. The other day, Steve was talking about this, that these are representing different views. There is a view where we can say, Well, really not the Buddha. The Buddha lived 2,600 years ago. Come on, this Zen talk is crazy. Historically, in the world of form, we are not Shakyamuni Buddha. Historically, in the world of form, we are not Linji, or Wangbo, or Baijiang, or Guishan, or any of these people. We're just ourselves, right now, January 2016, in Worcester, Massachusetts. That's deeply true. This person sitting here, listening to this talk, or giving this talk, is just this person. If we get into the idea, even in the world of form, of lacking or having enough, then we miss something. It's not that there's anything missing. This is complete, and this is where we turn the world of form upside down, and the world of the absolute, of everything being one family, everything being just this, enters. And we realize that, yes, Linji's right, we are Buddhas, because Buddha just means one who is awake. This is the world of Mu. This is the world of the sound of the single hand. Everything is just this. There's nothing outside of it. There's no lacking. There's no having a bowl of rice tomorrow. There's eating it right now and enjoying every tasty morsel. There's going through the rice and separating it into edible and inedible, but not devaluing the inedible. There's being present with things just as they are, and this is what happens when form and emptiness come together, when everything is just as it is. This is the life of freedom. This is what Lin Ji is pointing to. He says, my friends, this is my insight. My insight. There's no difference between you and Shakyamuni Buddha. He's not even imposing it on anybody. He's not even saying, I want you to believe this. He's saying, this is my view. This is what I've come to from my understanding, from my own experience. There is no difference between you and the historical Buddha. Today, in every daily activity you do you feel you lack anything? There's a way to do this that isn't an idea, to fully be present in things just as they are. Nothing is lacking. Nothing has been lacking from the beginning. Everything we've ever needed is here. Nothing lacking. Dogen talks about this in his commentary on one of our precepts. Nothing is lacking. The world is full of nectar. Nothing has been lacking from the beginning. And then Lin Ji says, is there any moment when the six miraculous beams of light do not shine out? He could mean the six senses, seeing and hearing and smelling and tasting and touching and thinking, which is the sixth sense in Buddhism. Thoughts arise, who's thinking them? We see and we hear, but who's seeing? Who's hearing? Who's smelling and tasting and feeling? These are not questions to be answered, but we sense our way into this vivid life, which he describes to six miraculous beams of light. It is miraculous. There isn't anything that isn't miraculous about this ordinary daily activity of walking and sitting, of sleeping and going to the bathroom, of sorting through the rice and cooking, of ringing the bells and chanting. And then he says, anyone who has that insight will be a person who has nothing to do throughout his life. Boy, do you ever get stressed with all the things you have to do? I do. This is a deep misunderstanding. I'm not talking about stress reduction here. I'm talking about seeing through, having to be the one who does anything. We are not the one who does. We are the one who experiences, receives the teachings of everything. Sometimes in the form of the teaching of the stomach, and sometimes in the form of words like this. Whatever the source, Our only job is to be the person of no rank who simply receives and acts and steps, not being in charge of anything, but forming an intention to be present, and then ultimately even dropping that. My friends, as far as the insight of this mountain monk goes, there's no difference between you and Shakyamuni Buddha. Today, in every ordinary daily activity you do, do you feel you lack anything? Is there any moment when the six miraculous beams of light do not shine out? Anyone who has that insight will be a person who has nothing to do throughout his life. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable. And come forward as yourselves. Comment, question. Could be about this talk, and anything about your practice.
When you were talking about the role of the teacher in also taking away, you know, the sword of wisdom. I loved the picture of the, you know, parental teacher watching the children on the playground, you know, with the carrot sticks. You know? But then the other side of it, you know, maybe seems less welcoming. I also thought of how the way that life teaches us in the same way, you know, that these things come to us and happen to us that completely wipe us out. And these, too, can be ways in which the loss becomes a gaining. And that poem by Rumi, that thieves may come to the house of yourself and destroy everything and to clear you out for some new treasure. I'm not repeating it exactly.
I like your translation.
So this sense of being open to welcoming what may be presented either by your teacher or by life as we interact, you know, that. So all beautiful images. Thank you very much.
As you were saying that, I was realizing I didn't say the other side of the parent in the playground is if the kid runs out into the traffic, you don't just go, "Oh, the carrot sticks are waiting for you." You run.
Yeah.
No, don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there is that. But I think I think I love the point about, wow, life does this to us. Mm-hmm. It's not even the embodiment of a teacher. It's life is our teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not on purpose. I don't mean that in some...
Yeah, right.
But it's just things are wonderful and things are terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Just over and over and over.
Yeah. The nature of life is like this.
Yeah, absolutely.
During the talking, after the talking, I said yes, and because the return word, after the return word, that's it.
Turning word.
And finally, when I closed the door, I said, oh, it's a great teaching because. I could see that I was waiting for something, and finally the teacher gave me the feedback of a way of being, an attitude, and your talk is. Was very rich and pointed this attitude this moment. Mm-hmm. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sometimes, yes, I think I like something or have too much or.
Oh, lack. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah.
It's like I was telling you this morning. I love having taking time for breakfast. getting breakfast in short time, and finally I said yes, but even at home. When you have a lot of time, you said, oh, having breakfast just in front of the beach will be fantastic. So he pointed it as well.
Mm. Yeah, both sides.
Enough. Yeah. Mm.
It's mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's a great image from a teacher named Byron Katie, and she had a degenerative eye disease, and she was talking about putting shampoo on her hand in the shower. And she can't tell how much shampoo. So she says, well, too little or too much is just the right amount.
So was Wang Bo, is that the teacher's name?
Yeah, that's Linji's teacher.
Yes. Was he testing the cook, or did he indeed believe there was too much?
What's your sense of it?
I think he's by testing the cook. I hope he was wise enough to be testing the cook. I tend to look at these things as sort of black, white, very dualistic. Right, right. That if he did say that's too much, that's a very dualistic thing to say. Right. I'd be a little bit disappointed in him.
Yeah. Mm.
But it sets the stage for the whole koan, so I'm thinking maybe he is indeed testing.
Yeah. We can almost always assume that these guys are, if these stories, you know, which were revised and revised and revised and used and used and used over centuries, they were really refined, that they're all teaching stories. Who knows what really happened? But whoever wrote this down thought.
Well, there's no reason to think less of Huang Bo.
No, he's got a good reputation, really.
At least in this koan.
Yeah, and all the stories about Wang Bo. I mean, he's a very dynamic, strong teacher. He was a very big guy who had a pearl in his forehead. And when I gave a talk on Saturday at the Greater Boston Zen Center about Wang Bo and Linji's relationship, I shared the talk with Josh Bartok. And Josh said that pearl in his forehead was from doing prostrations over many, 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 many decades. Mm-hmm. He got a callus. Oh. Yeah, isn't that cool? Mm-hmm. But some people say it was a pearl.
But I think, just to elaborate a little bit, in these koans, I think it's always useful to take to do exactly what you're doing. Well, what if the teacher isn't a jerk?
Yeah, right.
Oh, you could do that here too.
That was my next point. That one, the other side of it is that we will always be disappointed in our teachers. Going back to what Bob was saying last night, that these mythological teachers will never disappoint us. But our human teachers will, because we will miss the mark. And then the deal is, as student, how do I use everything? And using everything is not, oh, this was a wonderful teaching, this teacher is so wise, but, wow, this is off, I need to say something. So this, in our Zen way, it's not about giving up the knowing. In fact, just the opposite. Mm-hmm. All of this is to notice when there's that turning word. You know, that the teacher may not even know, or you're reading along and something touches you, but to trust that resonance and then whatever happens, as Diane was saying, you know, sickness, old age, and death, everything is taken away, lose your job. how do I move into this? What if this is a Dharma gate? What if this is not a mistake? Right? That's the invitation to live a life, not that we like everything and not that we get everything, but that we even consider that question. What if this is not a mistake? This is what's here. Yeah. So wonderful question. Thanks.
How much hitting of people was there in Japanese society of these times outside of Zen teaching? Was it a common practice to hit people?
Well, this is Chinese.
Well,
yeah,
okay.
Chinese. Gosh, I don't know. Do you know? I mean, I assume that there was a lot of hitting and violence. I think it was a pretty violent society. We hear about people getting killed all the time and hit and struck and shouted at.
Yeah,
yeah, I think it was more normative, but I don't really know. I wasn't there. I just, you know, hear these stories. Diane and I encountered a story this morning about a minister who... a Chinese, you know, official who met with a Zen teacher and threatened to kill him. And the teacher said, essentially, go ahead, which was the turning word for this guy who then became a great adept, although never a teacher. He stayed a layperson, stayed in the government, then lost his position, died. But that happens too. But just beautiful, you know, that capacity to meet violence.
And I think whether there was literal hitting or not is, I mean, these, as Melissa said, these are stories, and this record of Lin Shi was created 250 years after Lin Shi lived. So one person suggests we might say it's based on a true story rather than it's the actual record of the dialogue. And so from that point, we all know what it's like to get hit, right? That somebody says something, somebody criticizes, or someone, there's that jarring moment. So really including that getting hit when you're just confused and that, you know, something comes up as part of our way.
I was just thinking about... recently, you know how they have that disclaimer on movies based on a true story?
Yeah.
I was watching a television program the other day that said, this is based on a true story, but it didn't really happen like this. So, wow, thanks for adding that second part. Because it's, you know, I think that this particular television show had been sued or something for misrepresenting. It really did. It's like, I stopped it right there and I said, okay, thank you, turning word. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, this is another, these are stories. We live through stories. We tell ourselves stories about ourselves. This story that I'm lacking is a really big story that most of us carry around. Such, so pervasive, you know. And to see it as a story. Stories illuminating stories. Mm. You know, we recently saw the movie Spotlight. It had the same disclaimer. Mm-hmm. And I heard on the radio people saying, but this wasn't right, and that wasn't right. And I was there. One of the heroes of this story was interviewed on the radio. And the hero said... The guy who was being interviewed said, you know what? It doesn't matter. I don't really remember what exactly happened. And all the people have their own stories. And it's pretty much what happened. And it's a work of art. I just was like, thank you.
Yeah. We just need a disclaimer that says no Zen students were harmed in
the, in the creation of this.
In the creation of this Koran. Right. Sounds like, or, and no cats.
Right, no cats.
No cats were harmed. There's a famous Zen story about a cat being cut in two.
So this teaching about nothing lacking, is one of the real sticking points for me. The teachings, I get caught here a lot, you know, looking at, I mean, well, as you said, your daily life, right? Is it do you have the sense that anything is lacking? You know, and as you said, if you can say no, then please tell me how you do that. Because this is a very human thing, this perception of lack, and it comes up so vividly, this, you know, that things should be some other way. I mean, this isn't fair that this person that I love is dying, or you know, whatever, or that I have no food, or you know, whatever the thing is. I mean, it's just so vividly wrong and upsetting, and I get so angry about that things are this way. And then this teaching comes along and says, you know, nothing is missing. The one that has really gotten me is the Hakuin one, the song of Zazen, you know, where everything is nirvana and nothing is missing, right? This place right here is it, you know. Truly, is anything missing now? And
same thing, yeah.
So sometimes, you know, things are just so totally missing, you know.
And you know, and this is the extremity of view. So in the view where we're in the world of form, things are missing, things are wrong, things are unfair. And if we're in the realm of oneness, everything's perfect. Our job is actually to bring those things together, not get extremely caught in one view or the other. Right. I was having lunch with a friend the other day who's a practitioner, not a Zen practitioner, a Vipassana practitioner. And I was complaining to her about a certain lack in my life and kind of going on and on. She was patiently listening to me. And, you know, and I ended this whole rant by saying, "It's just not fair." And she said, "It sure isn't. Did you expect it to be fair?" Mm-hmm. You know, which, how many times have I said that to
right.
people? Mm-hmm. And it was a turning word. It was like, right. Thank you. And we laughed. You know, so there was that, I was caught, she wasn't caught. This is why we need each other. And then, boom, neither of us were caught. You know, and that's it. So to honor the difficulties, but also to see that we add on something, when we keep adding on heads over heads, right? So this isn't fair. It should be like this. There's something wrong with me. Oh. Right? And it's really just this shitty thing happened. So to get to the basis of that is fair. I think that's really important, right? Yeah, and this teaching of Hakuin. I was just thinking about it this morning when I was preparing for the talk. Samsara is nirvana. It really is, because there isn't some other place where these shitty things don't happen.
Right.
The teaching is that life is suffering. Right. There's no, the secret practice we all have is that maybe if I do it right,
right.
I'll stop suffering. Mm-hmm. But it's having a different relationship with suffering.
Right. And I think you said that it's not about achieving a state where you know bad things don't happen and mm-hmm. you don't ever have a sense of lack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Finding
yeah.
something in the middle of
right.
all of that.
Right.
That quote I read yesterday from Lynchy was, "Where would you go?" You know,
right.
It's just an imaginary thing. You know,
yeah.
so
right.
and
yeah.
it's a story, and that we make the story very hardened. And,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Did you have your hand up?
No, but I was just thinking about the talk yesterday, and it marinated overnight, and I was thinking about suffering and how, you know, I wouldn't be here if I didn't suffer, so I didn't want to be rescued.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it all came as a perfect circle there,
mm-hmm.
in the suffering, kind of like a
mm-hmm.
I heard, I don't know where I read it or heard it, but kind of like an oyster gets a piece of sand, and through the discomfort makes a pearl. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I wouldn't have a pearl right now. It wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so what right is it for me to rob somebody else of their pearl
mm-hmm.
by, you know, taking action, because for myself, it loses clarity with me why I'm actually doing it. At what point am I, you know, the beginning when you said, just feel your heartbeat, that was, to me, that was the truest thing I heard, because I feel that all the time. I feel it in my stomach, and I can feel other people suffering.
Yeah.
So the obvious next step is, okay, I need to help end that suffering.
Yeah.
At what point am I actually helping them, or am I trying to end the way I feel? Is it a selfish action? What am I doing?
And I think that's such a really big insight, mm-hmm. you know, because I think most helping is to relieve our discomfort. Right. And just to be able to pause like we do, and not, one of the great things about Sesshin is you can't help people. You're supposed to sit, it's not your job. Mm-hmm. You see somebody suffering, you know, maybe somebody's sobbing, and you're not supposed to go over and comfort them. That's the Shuso's job, or the teacher's job. That's not your job. So you have to learn this restraint. Maybe I'm not the one who jumps up and helps, and maybe things work themselves out in this way. And then, of course, later, Sesshin's over, and you can practice it in daily life, right? Which is whenever we leave the temple, we do this. Practice it in daily life and see how we give ourselves permission to feel that discomfort. Mm-hmm. Just a few seconds more, I think. And then maybe act anyway. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Be careful if you make the slightest gesture. You might be called upon to give a little Dharma talk.
I just what Steve, you and Melissa were both saying about, if you don't feel any lack, let me know, sort of highlighted for me where I tend to get stuck is I hear these teachings and then I go, okay, I don't feel any lack.
Sorry.
This may be obvious to some people, but for me it's new.
Is that a spouse?
I feel that you are a person of no lack.
Actually, for many levels.
But just to see and this constant encouragement not to gloss over. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a danger in spiritual practice. We right. hear these right. great teachings and then we go around, I have no lack, I have no lack. Rather than to allow ourselves to feel it. Mm-hmm. Like we can get into a kind of tyranny of Zen. You know, this is how you're supposed to be. Well, I shouldn't feel like this. Yeah. You know, and I think, Steve, one of the things you bring so lovingly to the Sangha is this, and in your Dharma talk you said, so you're Buddha now, but do you feel like Buddha? Like really, really investigating. You hear this thing, and is that so for me? And really sincerely asking and not abandoning the answer you get. Because then you can say, well, no, I don't, but something must be wrong with me, so I just... But... Wow, no, I don't. You know, or yes, I do feel lack. And having the faith, the confidence to stay with the lack itself, not using Zen as the new Band-Aid, you know? It's a Band-Aid with little Buddhist scenes painted on it. Right? Instead of Mickey Mouse, it's Bongbo, the Bongbo Band-Aid. Oh, I'm cool now. Yeah, I got my
tattoo. Well, that's one of the things I really appreciated about when you take just a couple of sentences of this, mm-hmm. you know, that that he says, as far as the inside of this mountain monk goes, he's, you know, like, find it for yourself. Really, find it for yourself.
Yeah.
So... We will.